This is Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. I'm Taildragger, and this is the Hangar. Friends, I have been wanting to do this one for a long time. We're going to talk about a group of pilots who flew every hot airplane the United States Army Air Forces had during World War II. They flew them hard, they flew them well, and then their country told them to go home and be quiet about it. For more than three decades, that's exactly what happened. Today we're talking about the Women Air Force Service Pilots, the WASP, and if you don't know the story, you need to. If you think you know it, I promise you there's more. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo private pilot, instrument rating all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's set the scene. It's 1942. The United States is burning through pilots faster than the training pipeline can produce them. Every man who can pass a physical and learn to fly is needed overseas. But somebody still has to ferry brand new airplanes from the factories to the bases. Somebody has to tow targets for gunnery practice. Somebody has to test aircraft that have just come out of maintenance, including airplanes that mechanics weren't entirely sure were safe to fly yet. Two women saw this problem clearly before most of the brass did. Jacqueline Cochran was already one of the most famous pilots in America. She'd won the Bendix Trophy in 1938, racing from Burbank to Cleveland faster than any man or woman alive. She was fierce, she was connected, and she had been writing letters to every general she could find telling them the military needed women pilots. Nancy Harkness Love had the same idea but a different approach. Quieter, more diplomatic, but just as determined, Love had been flying since she was 16 years old. She had her transport rating, she could fly anything with wings. In the fall of 1942, both programs launched almost simultaneously. Love's group was called the Women's Auxiliary Ferrying Squadron. The WAFS Cochran's was the Women's Flying Training Detachment. By the summer of 1943, the Army merged them into one organization, the Women Air Force Service Pilots, the WASP. Now here's where it gets interesting. To even apply, a woman needed to already hold a private pilot's license with at least 200 hours.
200 hours? Think about that.
In 1942, a woman who had 200 hours of flight time had overcome obstacles most of us can't even imagine. Flight schools that wouldn't accept women, banks that wouldn't loan money to a woman for flight training, families who thought the whole idea was insanity. 25,000 women applied. Fewer than 1,900 were accepted. Only 1,074 graduated. They trained at Avenger Field in Sweetwater, Texas, and I want you to picture this place. It's flat dust everywhere. West Texas wind that never stops blowing. The women lived in barracks that had been built for male cadets, with plumbing that didn't always work and scorpions that absolutely did. The Army issued them men's flight suits because nobody had thought to make flight gear for women. They called them zoot suits. Some of these gals were 5'2" cinching up coveralls designed for a 6-foot man, and they made it work. The training program was the same as what the male cadets got. Primary, basic, advanced instrument, cross country. 210 hours of flight training, ground school covering meteorology, navigation, physics, military law. The washout rate was brutal. If you couldn't hack it, you were gone. The women who made it through were assigned to bases across the country. And this is the part that doesn't get told enough. They didn't just ferry little trainers around. Let me give you some numbers. WASP pilots flew 77 different types of military aircraft. 77. That includes every fighter, every bomber, and every transport in the Army Air Force's inventory. They flew the P-39 Air Cobra. They flew the P-40 Warhawk. They flew the P-47 Thunderbolt, which was one of the heaviest single-engine fighters of the war, a beast of an airplane that scared plenty of male pilots on their first checkout. They flew the P-51 Mustang. They flew the P-61 Black Widow, a twin-engine night fighter that was one of the most complex aircraft in the inventory. And they flew the B-26 Marauder. Now, pull up a chair for this one, because the B-26 story is something special. The Martin B-26 had a reputation. The men called it the Widowmaker. They called it the Flying Coffin. They called it one a day in Tampa Bay because of the training crashes at MacDill Field in Florida. The B-26 had a high wing loading, a high landing speed, and it was absolutely unforgiving if you got behind the airplane. Male pilots were refusing to fly it. Morale in the B-26 training units was in the gutter, so the Army had an idea. They sent WASP pilots to Dodge City, Kansas, to fly the B-26. The thinking was straightforward, and maybe a little cynical. If women could fly the Marauder, the men would be shamed into getting back in the cockpit. And it worked. The women flew the B-26. They towed targets with it, they flew it on administrative missions. They demonstrated that the airplane was perfectly flyable if you respected it and flew it by the numbers. The male pilots got the message. But here's what gets me about that story. Those women knew exactly why they'd been assigned to the Marauder. They knew they were being used to embarrass the men. They flew it anyway, because the airplane needed flying and they were pilots. Period. There was another mission that was even more dangerous, and it almost never gets mentioned. Some WASP pilots were assigned to tow targets for anti-aircraft gunnery training. They would fly at a set altitude and airspeed, dragging a long fabric target behind them on a cable, while soldiers on the ground shot live ammunition at the target. Live ammunition, the gunners were students, which means their accuracy was not exactly reassuring. Some of those WASP pilots came back with holes in their aircraft that were not in the target. They also served as test pilots. When an aircraft came out of major maintenance or repair, someone had to take it up and see if it would fly. That someone was often a WASP pilot. They flew aircraft that had been damaged and rebuilt. They flew aircraft that had been modified with experimental equipment. They flew aircraft that nobody was entirely sure about. 38 WASP pilots were killed in service. 38. And here's the part of this story that has always made my blood boil a little bit, if I'm being honest. When a WASP pilot was killed, the military did not pay for her funeral. The military did not drape her coffin with a flag. Her fellow WASP would pass a hat to collect money to send the body home. They would sometimes buy a flag with their own money to drape over the casket. The women were classified as civil servants, not military personnel. They received no military benefits, no veteran status, no GI Bill, nothing. In December of 1944, Congress voted on a bill that would have given the WASP full military status. It failed. The male civilian ferry pilots lobbied hard against it. They were worried that if the women were militarized, the men would be drafted into combat units. So the bill died. On December 20, 1944, the WASP program was deactivated. The women were told, "Thank you for your service, now go home." No discharge papers, no veterans benefits, no official recognition, their records were sealed and classified. For more than 30 years, the WASP story was essentially erased from official history. When the Air Force began admitting women to pilot training in 1976, the press reported it as the first time women would fly American military aircraft. The surviving WASP women saw those headlines and said, "Wait just a minute." It took until 1977 for Congress to finally grant the WASP veteran status. 33 years after deactivation, many of the women had already died. And even then, the fight wasn't over. It took until 2010 for the WASP to receive the Congressional Gold Medal, which is the highest civilian honor Congress can bestow. At the ceremony in Washington, about 200 surviving WASP attended. Most of them were in their late 80s and 90s. They wore their original uniforms. Some of them were in wheelchairs. And they were finally officially honored for what they did. Now, I promised you a restoration angle on this one, and I've got a good one. There's an airplane at the Commemorative Air Forces Museum that connects directly to the WASP story. The CAF maintains a Beechcraft C-45 Expeditor, which is the military version of the Beech-18. The WASP flew the C-45 extensively as a utility transport and as a twin-engine trainer. This particular airplane has been meticulously restored to its wartime configuration, right down to the olive drab paint and the military markings. But what makes it special is the mission it flies. Now, the Commemorative Air Force uses it as a flying classroom. They take it to air shows and fly-ins and tell the WASP story to anyone who will listen. The airplane itself becomes a teaching tool. Kids can walk up to it, touch it, look inside the cockpit, and hear about the women who flew these machines during the war. And the National WASP World War II Museum in Sweetwater, Texas, right there at the old Avenger Field. They've been doing incredible work preserving artifacts and oral histories. If you're ever driving through West Texas, and I know that's a commitment, make the detour. Go to Sweetwater, stand on that ramp where those women learned to fly. The wind still blows the same way it did in 1943. There's also an ongoing effort to identify and restore primary trainers connected to the WASP program. Stearman biplanes, Fairchild PT-19 trainers, and Volte BT-13s that were flown at Avenger Field. Some of these airplanes have been traced through their serial numbers back to the specific training classes that used them. A couple of them are flying again today, restored with the Avenger Field markings. Every time one of those old trainers takes to the sky, it's a small act of historical justice.
I think about what those women were really fighting for. They weren't fighting for recognition. At least not at the time. They were fighting for the right to fly, that's all. They were pilots and there was a war on, and they wanted to serve. The fact that it took their country 3 decades to say thank you is a failure that belongs to all of us. But the fact that we know the story now, that matters. The fact that there are restored airplanes flying with WASP markings, that matters. The fact that young women walking into flight schools today can look up and see a picture of Jacqueline Cochran or Nancy Love or any of those 1,074 graduates and say, "She did it first," that matters. Back when Avgas was cheap and airspace was free, there were women strapping into Mustangs and Marauders and putting their lives on the line for a country that wouldn't even give them a proper funeral. That's the definition of flying for the love of it. Sources for today's show include the National WASP World War II Museum, the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum's WASP Collection,
official Army Air Force's historical records, and oral histories preserved by the WASP organization and Texas Women's University Archives. Folks, Radio Hangar is an AI-generated aviation broadcast built by pilots who believe these stories deserve to be told. You can learn more at radiohangar.com. I'm Tail Dragger. Fly with honor and never forget the ones who flew before you. Radio Hangar, keep the blue side up.